Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
Matthew chapter 9, beginning in verse 18. In this age, there's so much skepticism and unbelief. It is so good for the soul to be able to go back to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, and read those words and meditate on the things that are written and show the things that they provide for us as evidence for our faith that Jesus is the Christ. Matthew's telling us what Jesus did. And He did His miracles. He healed the leper. And then the centurion servant. And Peter's mother-in-law. And He stilled the storm. And He cast out demons. And He raised the sick of the palsy and said, "Thy sins be forgiven thee." But can He raise the dead? This story is told by Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But Mark and Luke give a lot of details that Matthew does not give. Matthew's writing to the Jews, and the Jews would have been very familiar with this story, because the fame and the story of this spread abroad into all the land when He did that. Mark and Luke may have been writing to more remote audiences and hence gave more details. But Matthew is not so much as informing his audience of these things, but giving them enough to remind them of what was said of those times about when Jesus did this. Jesus is back in Capernaum, and a ruler comes to Him. Matthew calls Him a certain ruler. Mark and Luke identify Him further as a ruler of the synagogue. Now, usually the religious leaders were antagonistic to Christ and jealous of Him. But not necessarily so at the synagogue level. This would have been a local religious ruler that would be somewhat in the role that the elders serve congregations or churches today, the ruler of the synagogue. He would have been well known and well respected by the people in Capernaum. Not only that, Mark and Luke also give us his name, Jairus. Now that is not a common name, the commentators will say. That's not a common name among the Jews, but it's certainly a name they would have been familiar with. And so it's a specific ruler with a name in a specific place. These are the kind of details that are provided about this event that makes these things verifiable by the people that receive these letters. And so these are important details. This ruler came worshiping Him. And you go and look at the word, and the word literally means bowing down before Christ. And I wasn't able to follow it, but there's one of those words, worship, that literally means to bend the knee. It's not necessarily that he was honoring Him as deity, but he's certainly giving Him honor in the way that this word is used in this context. And again, Mark and Luke tell us that He fell at His feet. Why did this ruler of the synagogue come to Jesus and fall at His feet? It was because of his daughter. He's coming beseeching Christ for His mercy on behalf of his daughter. Mark calls this his little daughter. And Luke says it's his only daughter. And that she's about 12 years old. And he said, "Come lay your hands upon her that she may be healed and live. Because she is even now dead." Now that's the way Matthew puts it. And remember now, Matthew is summarizing this. If I just had Matthew, I might think she was already dead. But even now dead, those words mean she's at the point of death. And that's the very words that Mark used. She lieth at the point of death. Now when Luke tells this, in the King James Version, It's translated this way, that she lay a dying. Now, we don't usually use that prefix "a" that way much in our speech, and we might think, well, to hear something like that, that sounds kind of quaint. That's old-fashioned sounding, isn't it? She lay a dying. But the King James Version was translated at a time, really, when the English language was not only more elegant, but even more precise. See, in the Greek, they had a way to distinguish their verbs, and the verb in the Greek that she lay dying is an imperfect verb, meaning she was in the process of dying but was not yet dead. It wasn't a perfect verb, which would be a completed action, but imperfect. And that's what the prefix "a" would add to the verb in that older, more elegant English that the King James Version was translated into. And so they captured the tense of the original verb by what sounds to us maybe like a little quaint way of speaking, but it had purpose and reason for it. She lay a dying. Now Jesus followed Jairus, and the people followed Jesus. Mark says it was much people. And both Mark and Luke said that they thronged him. Now that means there would be a crowd of people that were following Jesus, and they were very close to him. Jesus would not have a lot of personal space as he was walking. People would just be all around him as he's making his way to Jairus' house. And in that crowd, there was a woman that had suffered from an issue of blood for 12 years. Mark tells us in Mark chapter 5 and verse 26, she had suffered many things of many physicians. And she had spent all she had. And none could heal her. And she was nothing better, but worse. I know physicians. A dear friend of mine is an elder in the church that is a surgeon. He inflicts pain on his patients in an attempt to help them. And he knows that some of them have suffered many things at his hands. And sometimes he can't help them. And we know how expensive medical care is. And that was not uncommon and hasn't been uncommon. She had spent all she had going to doctor after doctor after doctor, and the cures that they would try to provide for her had increased her suffering. She'd done this for 12 years, and now she's worse. And she's in that crowd. Now, it doesn't tell us here, but more than likely, she probably didn't feel like she ought to have been in that crowd. Because we read in the book of Leviticus, let's get to chapter 15, that a woman with an issue of blood was considered unclean. And she was to keep herself away from others, lest through their contact with her, she would render them to be unclean. And so here she was in this crowd, and the text says that she came up behind him. And she reached out and touched the hem of his garment. Because she said, if I could but touch the hem of his garment, I can be made whole. Now, this is one of those passages that just give us a little glimpse of how people dressed in those days. You would have an inner garment and an outer garment. it'd be much like my shirt and coat here. My shirt being the inner garment, and the coat that I'm wearing being the outer garment. And so she came out and touched the hem of his garment. And when she did, straightway, the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the plague. That's what Mark tells us. Immediately she was healed. Now, she had had this condition for 12 years. Sometimes people get to feeling bad, and they feel bad so long that they've probably forgotten what it was like to feel good. The feeling bad becomes the norm. And after 12 years of the suffering and weakness that would be inherent with a condition such as this, she knew immediately. She was healed. She felt it in her. And how wonderful that must have felt. But there's something else that occurs here that we can easily get lost in this. If I'm standing there and on our way out and someone were to come by and touch my coat, I wouldn't know it. If they came up from behind and touched the hem of my coat, I wouldn't feel that. But Jesus also knew immediately what had taken place and who had done this thing. He asked, "Who touched me?" And when he said this, the disciples, well, they were incredulous. They said, well, Master, there's people all around. I mean, this is a crowd jostling and bumping one another, and they were thronging him. How can you ask, "Who touched me?" But Jesus knew. And before she confessed, he turned to see her. And Luke says that the woman saw that she was not hid. And it says that she came to him trembling and falling down and confessed and told him what he did and why she did that and what had happened to her. Matthew tells us that Christ said to her, "Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace." I love those words, "be of good comfort." When I try to look through the Greek, this word keeps popping up in the sayings of Christ. It's translated various ways, but it's that same word. It's that word tharsay. And sometimes it's translated, "be of good cheer." And sometimes it's translated, "be of good courage." Here's that beautiful word, "be of good comfort." And all those thoughts are wrapped up in that word. There's no one way in the English language to fully capture the idea behind tharsay. But it's that cheerful courage and comfort that comes when everything is okay with God. So, daughter, tharsay, thy faith hath made thee whole. Because this woman believed. She believed if she could touch the hem of his garment, she could be healed. And that confidence, that conviction, that faith drove her to go find Jesus and to brave that crowd. And to reach out unto Him and to touch Him. And so that faith spurred her into the action that she needed to take that she would be made whole. And so He said, "Go in peace." So she was healed from that hour. And while we would rejoice at that miracle and marvel at what had taken place yet, before we have time to rejoice, even as Jesus was saying these words, someone came from that ruler's house. He told the ruler, "Thy daughter is dead. trouble the master no longer. Now, I've been the father of little girls. Those words would have crushed me. They would have dulled me and stupefied me. Now Jesus replied to him. Jesus said to him, "Fear not, believe only, and you shall be made whole." Or, "And ye shall be made whole." Fear not, believe only, and ye shall be made whole. But now if that had been me, I don't even know if I could have heard those words. And in that almost state of shock and hurt, just followed Jesus onto your house. When Jesus got there, the mourners were already there and they're playing their flutes. Now, in that culture, you would hire mourners for the funeral. They wouldn't necessarily be mourning, but they would sure put up the show, so there would be mourning. All this wailing and this flute playing would add to the mood of the mourning and the death, and so they were the hired professional mourners that had already come to the scene, and that they arrived so quickly amazes me, almost wondering if they were like the ambulance chasers. Here's our chance, you know, to get our tip out of this. Jesus had come for a very different reason. When Jesus arrived, he said, "She is not dead. She's only sleeping." And those mourners laughed at him. You can hardly think of anything more insensitive or hypocritical or cruel. It says that they laughed him to scorn. Now, I've had people laugh at me. I know how that feels. You young people, you try to do what's right. There's going to be those, they're going to laugh at you. Some of us adults, we felt that. They've laughed at us. It doesn't feel good. And take comfort here that Jesus knows how that feels. And He would know even more. He'd know what it felt like for them to spit on Him. And to pass by as He's suffering on that cross, wagging their heads. So they laughed Him to scorn. But Jesus passed by them and said, "I want Peter and James and John and her mother and father to come with me into the room." And they went in there where the little girl was, and He took her by the hand and said, "Talitha kumai." Now those aren't magic words, that's the Aramaic. While most of the New Testament is Greek, there's a few Aramaic words. It was the spoken language of the people. And that's what those words are, and they simply mean, "Young lady, arise." And Luke 8 in verse 55 says that her spirit came again, and she arose. And Jesus said, "Give her something to eat." And it says that her parents were astonished with great astonishment. And He told them not to tell. But they did. And His fame went abroad into all the land. I love these stories about Jesus in these two hopeless situations. And out of these two situations, He healed the woman and He raised the little girl. Let me ask you this. How could this not have been the Christ? And for our faith is the reason that these stories are told. And one of the lessons we learn here is it's never hopeless with Christ. Something else we learn here that I found interesting, and that is the two expressions, the point of death and her spirit returned. Now, what is death? Well, that tells us. Well, what is the point of death? Well, we can understand it now. Death is when our spirit leaves our body. And the body appears to be sleeping. But the spirit is not dead. And the spirit returns. And the body is raised. That's what will happen to us. One of these days we're going to reach a point of death. We'll be a dying until that point comes, and then we're dead. And that means the body will be at rest, but not the spirit. It lives on. And we read it will return. And the dead shall be raised. And we'll face a judgment and receive those things that we did in our body.